Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Leading LDS podcast. And if you're new, a super welcome to you. This is where we discuss all things leadership as it relates to the serving in the LDS church in leadership, because many of us are called, few are chosen, and all of us have no clue what we're doing. Am I right? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, but I digress. Now, here's the thing. My name's Kurt Frankum, and one thing you may not know about me, and this came to mind because I'm recording this at the time when the Utah Jazz are in the playoffs, and I hope by the time you hear this, they are still in the playoffs. But nonetheless, there was one time, I was probably 10, and I asked John Stockton for his autograph, because he's like my basketball idol. I asked him for his autograph, and he chewed me out, and it hurt. But that's a story for another time. In this episode, it's a How I Lead segment. Now, if you're not familiar with the How I Lead segment, this is where we talk with ordinary, everyday people about how they are extraordinary leaders. Because as you know, in this church, it's a lay leadership, and just anybody who's worthy and capable can be called to serve in leadership capacities. And one thing that I always struggled with as a leader is I always wanted to know what the other guy was doing. You know, whether I was an elders' quorum president, high priest, group leader, or bishop, whatever it is, I want to know what the other guy was doing. And so hopefully through these How I Lead segments, you can learn what the other guy is doing. And this is a different calling that we have not really tackled in the How I Lead segment. It is the calling of clerk. I don't think we've ever interviewed a clerk. We've interviewed people who've been clerks. And if you are that clerk that I did interview, I apologize if I'm forgetting that. But nonetheless, we talk with Michael Roper in Parker, Colorado, and he is currently serving as an assistant clerk. And he emailed me a few weeks ago and asked if there's any content about clerks. And I said, nope, but do you want to make some? And so we got together and did this interview. And this is a good one. It's a very practical one. We're kind of focused on tactics at time, but he goes through his 5 and 6 leadership principles that he leads by in his role as a clerk. And I think this is one, if you're a bishop, a stake president, or in a bishopric or stake presidency, I would recommend that you forward this on to the clerk in your wards or any clerk that you serve with. And I think they'll benefit from the guidance that Brother Roper gives. So we're headed to Parker, Colorado to talk with Michael Roper. Here we go. Today, we are headed to Parker, Colorado, which is closer than some of my other guests are to me. But nonetheless, we're talking with Michael Roper. How are you, Michael?
Doing great, Kurt. How are you today?
Good. Good. Now, where on earth or where in Colorado is Parker?
That's a great question. So Parker is kind of at the southeastern corner of the Denver metro area. It's just a little bit north of Castle Rock. Uh-huh. We're approximately 20, 25 minutes away east of the Denver Temple.
Oh, okay. Nice. Nice. And you mentioned before we hit record that you serve as an ordinance worker there.
That is correct.
Nice. So you wear the white jacket and everything, huh?
Everything, the name tag. It's great. It's one of the best callings ever.
Nice. You know, as being a member of the stake presidency, I discovered that the temple president encouraged us to become leader veil workers. I guess that's a thing. So whenever you do, you know, stake or ward temple nights, I get the opportunity. They've given me a name tag. This is obviously just for the Salt Lake Temple. And I've, you know, learned the ropes as far as being a veil worker. And it's been an incredible experience. I've really enjoyed it. So, and gives me something different to do as well when I go to the temple. So, which doesn't happen very often. So, well, that's great. And you today, this is a How I Lead segment, and we're going to talk all things clerk, right?
Sure. Sounds great.
And you reached out to me, I don't know, a few weeks ago and said, you know, you kind of highlighted the clerk calling and said that, you know, maybe there needs to be more content and information focused on this calling, because it is sort of the unseen leader. You know, that it's a very administrative, but nonetheless, there's a lot of responsibility that goes with those that serve in clerk as the clerk, right?
Yeah. So originally I was just kind of looking for some, to see if there's any podcasts that other clerks are, that you had interviewed or something along those lines. And then you asked me to interview. I said, oh, well, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. That's the people must be aware when you email me with an idea, I usually turn it around and say, well, why don't you do that?
But
hey, and that's fine. And if you, you know, I don't want to discourage people from sending me ideas or thoughts. And if you can't, you know, do it or don't want to be interviewed, that's fine. But nonetheless, it's everybody's got something to share. Really, everybody's a leader. So that's why I kind of turn around on you. So we'll jump into that a little bit. And before we do that, though, let's put you into context and get to know you and your background. And so I'll fire some questions at you and answer them as you feel so inspired. So where were you raised?
Well, I was actually raised here in Colorado in the Denver metro area. So I haven't strayed too far.
Nice. Okay. Very good. And when did you get baptized?
I was baptized when I was 8.
Okay. Come from a long line of Mormons?
Yes. In fact, have ancestors that crossed the plains in hand carts and such.
Nice. Very cool. And did you serve a mission?
I did. It was a long time ago now, though. Well, long for me. Some people won't agree with that, but it's a long time for me. I served in the Managua, Nicaragua mission from 96 to 98.
Wow. So, and you still use your Spanish?
Not as much as I'd like, but it hasn't left, so nice. I can't complain.
Very good. And did you attend college?
I did, but I never finished.
All right.
It was one of those things that it wasn't going to do anything for my career with where I'm at and what I do, so why accrue more debt when certifications are actually better?
Nice. So what did you end up doing for your vocation?
That's a little bit of a complicated question.
Oh, boy.
The simple answer is I work with data. So I do data analysis. I work with databases. I do some database architecture. I do process enhancement, process design, process evaluation, technical writing, report building, BI, so dashboards and things of that nature, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. You know, Michael, I'm so glad people like you in the world are born so that I don't have to do all those things.
Yeah, you got to be a little screwy just to enjoy it like I do. Yeah. So
I have a brother that's a database administrator, and I give him a bad time all the time. So you two could probably talk all sorts of technicalities and talk shop, you know. So
absolutely.
But nonetheless, glad you're doing it. And let's see, are you currently married?
Yes.
Where'd you meet your spouse?
In the cliche singles ward.
Nice. As did I. There's nothing wrong with that. So mine was in the back of the line for the potato bar. Where did you first talk with your wife?
FHE activity.
Nice.
They were doing a get to know you activity, and you just bounce around to different people. And
oh, speed dating, huh?
Something along those lines. Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did. And so we ended up going to a dance a few nights later, just at one of the local dance places, and kind of got to know each other and started dating. And yeah, now we're married.
Nice. And 12 kids at home, or how many kids you got?
So far, only one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's all the Lord has given us at the moment.
Great. And how old he or she?
It's a boy.
Oh, great.
And he's 10.
Nice. Nice. So coming in some formative years, get the priesthood here in a few. And
oh, yeah.
Fun time. All right. Now the real random questions. Who is the most famous Mormon you've ever met?
Elder Oaks.
Wow. Well, tell me about that. How did that, what happened?
Well, many years ago, so now in Denver, we have this thing called the Pepsi Center. But before it was the Pepsi Center, and that's where the Nuggets play. Uh-huh. It's called McNichols Sports Arena. And this is back in the days when they were doing regional conferences, and they'd pull people in from all over the region and have a big, massive conference, kind of like they do with state conferences now, but over the internet. And he was one of the speakers, and I ended up going and sitting with my adopted aunt, and she was disabled, and so she got to sit on the floor and had the opportunity to shake his hand and talk to him briefly.
Wow, and any wise advice did he give you in that moment, or you just a good smile and a handshake, and an impression was left?
Yes, and I have to say, I really like the way that he speaks. He's very direct. He doesn't beat about the bush at all. It's like, here's how it is and deal with it. I really like that.
You technical guys. I don't know.
Right?
No, it's true. He's and he's talked about that in one of these Mormon, not Mormon messages, but on the Mormon channel when they interviewed him, he sort of talked about his process of developing some of his conference talks, and they're very thought out. You know, he's not just going off the cuff, you know? So let's see, where am I? What is the first general conference talk that comes to mind?
That would be Elder Bednar's Tender Mercies.
Nice. That's a good one. One he did early on, right?
Yes. Newly called Apostle. Yes. Yeah.
Very good. Why does that one stand out?
A couple of reasons. Number one, it was just so simple. I mean, we read it all the time in the scriptures, but there was never any context to it. And so for me, I don't necessarily, I mean, there's big miracles that have happened in my life, but a lot of times, especially in my day-to-day life, it's more the tender mercies, the little things that the Lord does for us, and recognizing those little things has just helped me to have more gratitude.
Yeah. Awesome. Perfect. And what's your favorite General Conference tradition? Is there anything you do around your home or in your life around General Conference?
Not too much. The biggest thing that we did, so growing up, my father always took us to the priesthood session of conference. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter if we were old enough and had the priesthood or not. So that's something that I've done with my son from the time that he was very, very little. Now, part of that was because my wife was working in the evenings when he was very small. But it's just kind of carried on and continued as a tradition.
Nice.
It's just what we do.
So by the time he's 12 and ordained with the priesthood, he'll already know the program, right?
We hope.
Yeah. Might as well instill that in him young. That's great. That's great. So if you were to speak in General Conference, what topic would you choose?
That's a really tough one. It would have to be something along the lines of, brothers and sisters, we need to be kinder to each other and treat each other better.
Nice. Good. We had a few of those topics here at the most recent conference, so it's always nice to hear that.
We did. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
So wouldn't it be like an effective way to run a membership audit or something like that?
No. All right. Not at all.
Nice. Let's see. What makes you a unique Mormon?
I put some thought into this, and I came up with two things. The first one would be I'm one of the few adults in the church. In fact, I'm one of the few adults, period, that actually plays Minecraft.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Love Minecraft.
Is this an addiction, like, or is it just sort of a passive hobby you have?
It's more of a hobby. I don't have time to play nearly as much as I would like.
Nice.
But it's something that my son and I can also do together, and so we'll get on and we'll share through the LAN, share a connection over the Wi-Fi.
Nice.
And then play in the same world and build stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, especially your son's at that age where it's all things Minecraft, right? That's the ideal age for Minecraft. So a great way to bond with your son.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I just yesterday recording this, let's see, 2 days after Easter in 2017, and I was at my in-laws, and there's some kids, you know, we had all sorts of family and cousins and things there on my wife's side. And there's some kids down in the basement, and they're watching this thing. And I sort of wasn't really paying attention, walked through that family room, and I looked on the TV and it was Minecraft, but they were telling Bible stories, like the telling about the resurrection of Jesus through Minecraft. And like someone had built like the tomb and the, you know, the crosses and things. And so I think it was a YouTube video or something, but I thought, oh, that's kind of a unique way to get young people to pay attention to Bible stories, right? So
yeah, it's fascinating. Nice.
So what's the coolest thing you've built? And I really know little about Minecraft. I watched a documentary once about the craze of Minecraft and couldn't believe it. But is there anything interesting you've built or what's your approach to Minecraft?
I don't know if I really have much of an approach. I just kind of build stuff and
just whatever's cool. It's just like playing with Legos, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Build a building, make it look different, make hidden doors. You know, very simple doors. I'm not one of those guys that can build like working graphing calculators out of redstone. That's just not me.
Right.
You just like, and I don't have the time
to fool around. Right. And I'm sure somebody out there has built every last LDS temple or something in the Minecraft world. Right.
I'm sure someone has done that. Yeah.
Well, it looks like you need to start the first LDS Minecraft themed podcast. So I'll look forward to that coming out.
Sure.
Nice. So what about your leadership callings? What callings have you had in leadership, and what's your current calling?
Well, I have served at the ward and branch level. I've served in every auxiliary, I think, that you can as an elder.
Cool. Very nice.
So a lot.
A lot. You've made your way around the ward council there.
Yeah, not as much. I've spent some time in the ward council, but not as much. When I was a missionary, the mission that I was in, we had no stakes. It was all districts and all branches. So our mission president was the presiding authority for the church. And because of that, there were a number of areas where there wasn't enough members, or at least worthy active members, priesthood holders specifically, to call as branch president. So for whatever reason, the mission president decided to send me to two different areas where I got to serve as branch president.
Wow.
That was unique.
a lot of experience at a young age then. Unique experiences you face as a branch president in a foreign land.
Yeah, and I have to say, I was not very effective. I did not know what I was doing.
Well, there's a big secret, and that's most leaders feel that way. So, regardless of age, so that's cool. And what's your current calling? I guess you have a number of them.
Yeah, so I have two in the ward, and then you also mentioned that I'm a temple ordinance worker, which you actually get set apart for. A lot of people don't know that. Yeah. I'm sure you do, but others don't. But then I'm my primary calling in the ward is I'm the assistant ward clerk over finance, and then also have been asked to serve as an Eldritch Quorum instructor.
Nice. And is this your only clerk responsibility you've had, or has there been various others in the past?
This is the first time.
Nice. Nice. So you're jumping in and learning all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to... Well, initially, there was a lot to learn, just more about the process and procedures and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's... For me, I didn't find it. It was very complicated, as long as you do the things that you're supposed to do and do it regularly.
Yeah. And did you feel like your technical background helped you catch on to a lot of that? Or?
Yeah. So before I got into tech and into database stuff, I worked in the auto finance industry. So I understood a lot about numbers and how they go together and checking this and doing that and why we have to do this. And so a lot of that background really helped. You know, it's interesting when, so a high councilman came and he talked to me and said, hey, we want you to do this. And I'm like, well, okay, that doesn't sound like it's going to be too difficult. And he said, well, sometimes the calling isn't for us, it's for the ward.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting. I never thought about it.
Yeah. Now, how have you seen that manifest since you've been in that clerk role?
You know, in a couple of different ways. One of the things is the bishop's told me, our current bishop, right? He's told me on a couple of occasions, he says, you know, I don't have to worry about the finances. Yeah. Of the ward. Just don't have to worry about it because I know that they're in good hands and I don't have to worry about what's being done or what's not being done.
Yeah. And obviously he has to sign that report every month. Right. And that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about it. Sometimes there's been a few occasions when he's called me and said, hey, Brother Roper, I need you to go do a check. I was like, okay, I can do that, but it won't be till like 9, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, that's fine. Go get it done. Bring it over. I'll sign it and, you know, deliver it. Whatnot. And so it's from his perspective, at least from what he said, I guess, is that it's a big help to him because he just knows that things will get done and he doesn't have to worry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And so how would you describe, I mean, I think most people listening understand the role of a clerk, but week to week, are you the one always counting tithing with a member of the bishopric or do they do it together sometimes or what's your week to week roles look like?
Yeah, for the most part, that's what I do. I know in other wards, they'll trade off with the ward clerk and then the assistant ward clerk over finance, and they'll switch.
Mm-hmm.
And then whoever the member of the bishopric is for that week, that's going to count. But if I'm there, I count. And I don't mind it. I actually like it because I'm a little bit CDO. And so I like to really have my hands on it and know what's going on because it's my audit. When I get audited, or when the financial audit comes, I'm the one getting audited. It's not the ward clerk. It's not the bishop. It's me.
Yeah. You can answer for whatever is there.
My stewardship. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, as I generally do with these How I Lead interviews, ask you to prepare 5 leadership principles, and you are coming to the audience today with a bonus leadership principle. So we have 6 to go over today, but I'm sure they're all important. And I think it would be good to talk about some of these from the perspective of a clerk. And as we go through these, I would encourage, you know, bishops listening or bishopric members, stake presidents, whatever, to maybe forward this episode onto your clerk. And as we go through these and see what we can learn from one another. So the first one is kindness begins with me, just like in the primary song. Are you going to sing for us?
No, that's okay. The only line I can remember from it.
Nice. And so what do you mean by that? How does kindness begin with you as a leader?
So a couple things. First of all, kindness is a bit of a struggle for me. I'm very analytical, very hands-on, very data-oriented. And so it's not just about what we say to people, but it's how we say it. What are our interactions like with them? When it comes to finances and you're doing reimbursement checks, you're helping auxiliaries plan, whatever the case may be, it's very easy to say, no, we're not going to do that because of this, or no, that's not the right way to do it. And so there's definitely a great opportunity to develop a good relationship, you know, those relationships of trust that we talked about in the MTC.
Yeah.
And be kind. So it's being aware of how, first of all, what are the rules and regulations, but then saying, you know, that's great that you want to do that. This is what we've been counseled to do. Or say, hey, you know what? I couldn't figure out how you came up with this number. Help me understand how you did that. Let's look at the map. And I'm very specific on that. If it is one penny off, I will not issue a check.
Yeah, because
I know other people do, but I don't.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with being precise as a clerk, right? So, I think those are great points is, you know, with these administrative callings, there's so many policies involved with them that it's easy to just be like, listen, that's just not how we do things, or, you know, the handbook says different, so that's the way we're going to do it. But to just seek to understand and figure out what's going on so that they feel like they're validated and then take care of it from there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and as part of that too, when I'm interacting with people, I have to interact with people from all sorts of different auxiliaries in the ward. It's not just one or two people. It's not just, hey, here are my counselors or whatever the case may be, or I'm co-teaching primary with this individual. I'm interacting with a lot of people, and not everyone's going to agree with me. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is going to like me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It really doesn't matter whether they agree or whether they like. I still need to be kind in how I treat them and be respectful and polite.
Awesome. Great point. Next one you said is listen.
Yes. So I like the adage, God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason.
Right.
Right. And so listening is a couple different things, right? First of all, if we're always talking, we cannot even hear the words that others speak. And it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, but this is the policy. This is the procedure. Oh, we have to do things this way. Or, well, you know, really, we should do it like this. And maybe we're not hearing the question that they're asking, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that component to it. But listening is also more than just hearing the words. It's also hearing what is communicated, but what is not spoken.
Yeah.
You know, the verbal cues, the silence, and the whatever the case might be.
Love that.
Then if we're also talking all the time, we can't hear the spirit.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there's a lot in leadership that is more listen, but we sometimes romanticize over the, you know, the daring speeches and the profound, the talks, right, that inspire individuals. But a lot of leadership is listening. That's awesome. The next leadership principle you put is provide people with the experience of being free to choose and leave them satisfied with the process that led to their choice. I'm intrigued by this. What is there a story behind this one or an example?
Well, there's kind of a story. So a number of years ago, I went through kind of a self-development / leadership type course or series of courses. And this is one of the things that they taught. And so it's one of those principles that I try to apply in my life. So people, we all want to make choices. We all want to feel like our point of view is valid. So when we're interacting with people, if we say, well, no, you have to do it this way, that can really cause and create feelings of resentment. And that's not what we want to do, especially in the Lord's church. Now, there are times when assignments are given and, hey, this is the assignment and fulfill it or not, right? But even in that instance, we can still leave people with the experience of being free to choose. So here's an example. So somebody that I know in my ward, I've said to him a couple times, said, hey, you know, you can either come to church or not. It's entirely up to you. You know what you need to do, and you are welcome to sit with me whenever you want, but it's your choice. So what does that do? So by providing the experience of providing people with the experience of being free to choose, it gives them the opportunity to say, well, what is it that I really want to do, and what are the reasons behind it? Now, keep in mind, though, people don't have to be satisfied with the choice that they make, and they definitely don't have to be satisfied with the consequences of it. It's just about being free to choose. You know, the Lord gave us moral agency. He gave us the freedom to choose what we want to do in this life, and He invites us, and the Savior invites us to come unto Him, to do the right things, to keep the commandments. But it's still a choice. Now, are we going to like the consequences if we don't? Probably not.
Right.
So it's more about that. So as that applies to my calling, the way I see it is my role is to teach and advise on church policies as appropriate, make recommendations, particularly when somebody asks me, hey, what should we do? And then support the decision that's made.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. And this principle works very well with children as well. If children feel like they are making the choice rather than being told, they are a lot more easy to work with, right?
Yes. Yeah, I definitely find that with my son.
Yeah, and this can be tricky too, because you don't want to, this could easily turn into like a manipulation tactic, right? Where you're saying, where you're sort of leaving the choice up to them, but you have everything else you've said around that, you're nudging them towards, one choice over another. But really to be sincere and open and just say, you know, these are the choices and they're, each one has a consequence, good or bad. You know, what would you like to do? And sort of support that and let it lie as it is and face their consequence as they choose. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Next principle is manage your stewardship, and a clerk definitely has stewardship.
Yes. And I'm very particular about this. So my process is, first of all, when I start something new, create a process. Once it's created, then I follow it. And I have to be consistent. So if I create a process, see, every time I screw up in my calling and I do something wrong, it's because I did not follow the process.
Yeah.
And it seems so trivial, but it's the same principle like if you're driving a car. When you come up to a stop sign, push on the brake, come to a full and complete stop. Check both ways, make sure no one's coming.
Right.
Then apply the gas and go forward. It's the same kind of principle, just applied to this.
Yeah. And wouldn't you say this is applicable? I mean, how does this help you as far as audits are concerned, like or having a clean audit?
Yeah. If I didn't follow the process, my audits would be horrible and I would fail every time.
Yeah.
That's just how it would be. But by following the process, yeah, I may get dinged because somebody didn't want to cash a check and it went over the 90 days. Okay, ding me. I mean, there's nothing I can do. I can't make people cash their checks, but I can make sure that everything is input into the system right, that I've got all the documentation, that the bishop has signed off on everything. I can do those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of that, though.
Go ahead.
Part of that, though, too, means that as part of that process that I need to get those reimbursement checks out quickly. Mm. Because if I don't do that, that can affect a member's bank account.
Yeah. Yeah, especially for the big activities, right? That they're dropping hundreds of dollars, maybe close to $1,000 on the trek or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And even some little ones. So there's people that I have an idea of where their finances are at because sometimes I'm privy to some of that privileged information as part of my calling for doing fast offering checks. And I don't talk about it. I don't tell them that I know anything. But sometimes I'll go to these individuals when they come with a reimbursement check and say, hey, this is, or they'll ask me, hey, how soon are you going to get this? And I'll say, well, this is my plan to get this out. And I try to do it within 1 to 2 weeks. But if you need it sooner, let me know and I will cut you a check right now. Not an issue. We'll find the bishop, get his signature, and we'll get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. And, just going back to the general topic of managing your stewardship, you know, and you mentioned the first thing you mentioned was processes, right? And every calling has specific processes. And definitely the clerk calling has processes that are maybe more technical, more administrative, but they're very important. And I know, I'm in the state presidency, I'm the audit chairman, right? So we just got through an audit. And so I'm always reviewing the audit, seeing, what wards need to resolve things and whatnot. And the one that always comes up for a handful of wards is always that the bishop hasn't signed the monthly financial statement, right?
Yeah.
And it all goes back to if there's a process in place, a routine mm-hmm. that the clerk goes through every month to, to print that off, put it in his box or whatever it is, that's never going to be missed. And so it's usually a sign of, there's maybe a stewardship issue there that those processes aren't intact or they haven't been established in order to make sure that everything's going smoothly, right?
Yeah, and sometimes that's just a matter of, putting something in place, putting a reminder in your phone or in your calendar to say, hey, I need to print this report off.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me think of, and just throw out a random a book here that I enjoyed, but it's called The Checklist Manifesto, and it talks about this whole concept of checklists and how they seem so trivial at times, but they can be such a powerful tool. Airline pilots use checklists. As you're sitting in a airplane, you look in the cockpit and they are going through a checklist and they're checking something that hasn't gone wrong for the last 100 flights, right? But they check it every time and that usually ends up to us landing on our wheels very safely at the end of the trip, right? Rather than crashing to the earth. And so it's the same thing. All of us, that deformed checklist is a powerful thing, regardless of what our calling or stewardship is.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Awesome. Number five, counsel when appropriate. Who is it that you counsel with?
Well, I counsel sometimes with the bishop or with his counselors and some with the auxiliaries. You know, keep in mind, I'm not a counselor in the bishopric, and I don't pretend to be. I'm not looking for that. You know, if I was called, fine, but otherwise, no thanks. But there are opportunities to provide information and counsel to the bishopric members and then to the auxiliary or other leaders in the ward. You know, the bishops ask me questions about, well, how do you think we should do this, Brother Roper? Well, Bishop, this would be my recommendation, and that's fine. So I guess the way I see it is I have a, so there's that, right? When people ask me, then I'm going to give some counsel and I'm going to give some feedback. However, there are also times because of my stewardship when I have the responsibility to speak up. Is it something that's going against church policy or good accounting principles? Well, then I need to speak up. That's my responsibility to say something. And I've done that. I've spoken up and said, hey, you know, really, we need to do it this way because the policy and procedure is this, or this is how the church has asked us to do it or wants us to do it, and this is how we need to do it. Now, after that, my job then is to shut up and follow the counsel of the bishop, right? But if I don't speak up, then I don't feel that I am magnifying my calling and managing my stewardship.
Yeah, I love that. And it reminds me of Elder Bednar gave a training at the church for all the church managers, the employees of that actually work for the church. And it was online for, this was years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago. It was online for a time, but then the church realized it was open and they didn't mean for it to be open. So it was removed. But nonetheless, I had opportunity to watch it. And he talks about this time when he was a stake president and a visiting authority, he was in Arkansas, and a visiting authority came to the area and wanted to call a conference. And, Elder Bednar at the time, President Bednar, he shared with us, you know, respecting the authority of this visiting authority, but he knew that that visiting authority had no idea about the demographics, the geographics of the stake, and that calling a conference on a midweek conference would put a lot of financial burden on individuals that have to ride, you know, drive 1 or 2 hours. And they do it, even though they financially couldn't afford it, they would do it if asked. And so Elder Bednar just talks about this concept of offering this information so that that authority could make a better decision. But, you know, it would have been inappropriate if he wouldn't have offered it for the sake of, well, you know, I don't want to tell this authority what to do. But nonetheless, I think clerks land in that camp a lot, right? Where the bishop's trying to make a decision and your role is to offer as much information to him, even though some of the information may change his mind or sway him, you know, that's good because more information is going to help him make a better decision, right?
Yeah, completely. You know, so I have a lot of conversations with the bishopric members that I count with. Of course, it's just the counselors. Usually the bishop doesn't, I think he's counted one time in the time that I've been called in this calling, right? And that's because he wanted to make sure that he remembered how to do it.
Oh, that's great.
And so we did it. Fine. So otherwise, I'm talking with the counselors and I'm learning things from them. One of the things that one of the counselors shared with me is, hey, you know, when we go and do calling, sometimes we'll feel like we need to talk to said individual about a calling. And then we go and talk to them and we find out, hey, this really isn't the calling that they need, or they're moving and nobody knew. And so sometimes giving that additional information is a very positive thing, like you were talking about, because it'll change people's minds.
Yep. And that's how counsel and inspiration comes and works. And it's a beautiful thing for sure. And now for the final bonus leadership principle is invite the Spirit by following the promptings that come. When have promptings come for you?
Frequently. Not always related to my calling, but sometimes related to my calling. There's been a number of instances when I've been doing something and I had that hesitation in my mind that said, hey, you know, something's not quite right. You need to go back and check that. And sure enough, I've done it. And guess what? It was wrong. And I was able to correct it. And there again, not following the process, right? But the Spirit comes and it prompts very frequently. Sometimes it's a reminder, hey, by the way, you need to go get this done because I didn't set a reminder. And I need to go and get some paperwork done or issue some checks or ask this question. Find out some more. Go talk to the bishop about this. And so it's one of those things, you know, in this most recent lesson that we had in Elders Quorum, it was on the whisperings of the Spirit, which comes from Gordon B. Hinckley's, or the teachings of the prophets, Gordon B. Hinckley. And he says very clearly in there, he says, we need the Holy Spirit in our many administrative responsibilities. So yes, we are doing very administrative things, but they're also their sacred funds. This is the Lord's money. At least that's how I view it. It's the Lord's money. It's not my money. It's not the ward's money. It's the Lord's money that we're managing. And so how would he want it to be managed? Well, if we don't invite the Spirit into our lives, how can we invite the Spirit into our callings?
Yeah, I love it. Perfect. And, you know, that just those promptings, I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in the administrative side of a very administrative calling, right? That you're just, you're filing paperwork, cutting this check, you know, counting tithing, whatever. But to just maybe stop every once in a while and just look around of what you're doing, that, you know, you're managing the Lord's money and in that part of the kingdom, right? And helping make sure that everything's done in the up and up. And, you know, and I think that's when the promptings will come, when you recognize and embrace the spiritual side of a very administrative calling.
Yeah, that I'll tell you, shifting my focus and understanding that I'm in charge of, or my stewardship is overseeing the Lord's funds for the ward, that has really given me a different perspective on how we spend money in the church. And if I'm ever called into another auxiliary, which I'm sure at some point will probably happen, just right chances, right?
Sure, it always
then,
does.
Right? It always just comes around. So hopefully that will help shift my focus so that I can perhaps be a better steward as an auxiliary. Because I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't understand. They think, oh, well, this is our money. This is, you know, our auxiliary has X amount. Well, yeah. And we need to have activities. We need to do fun things. We need to have dinners. We need to socialize. And that's why it's all there. But also remember that it's the Lord's money.
That's great. Perfect. Well, Michael, I now want to ask you, is there any, kind of get down to the tactical and practical guidance that maybe a new clerk, especially financial clerk, could kind of benefit from? Is there any clerk hacks that, it's probably the wrong term to use, but you know what I mean? It's sort of a hip term. Any hacks that you would say, but we do this thing that really makes this easier?
The biggest thing is training. So the online training that the church puts out, do it. Get through it, get it done. But then go and bug somebody. Hopefully you have a state clerk that can actually give you training and is willing to sit down with you. Not all state clerks are. Not all state clerks have lots of time to do that. Not all state clerks have experience. But find someone to get some training and some guidelines from. When I was called, our ward clerk had moved a few weeks prior. And so I had no training. It was a new bishopric. And my first audit was not horrible, but it really wasn't great, because there were some very specific things I didn't understand. One is that the budget is very different from the other accounts. So the budget, if the budget category goes into the negative, as long as the overall budget is positive, then it's fine. But the other accounts, they cannot go negative. I learned that in my first audit.
Yeah. I just laugh every time I hear the term the other account, because it's just this ugly monster that rears its head in the in the clerk calling so many times. It's always the other account. Oh, we've got to clear out the other account. Well, how do we do that? Well, what, you know, it's maybe been going on for too long. So you have to, it gets messy, but beware of the other account. That would be a solid clerk leadership principle. Beware of the other account.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we do in our ward, and of course, this is under the direction of the bishop, so the bishop has the final say in it, is we reimburse for activities out of the auxiliary budgets. And then we transfer, so we collect money from fundraisers and parents and whatnot. And we put those into like the scout camp other account or the girls camp other account. And then we transfer those funds back into the budget. And that works really well for us because it's very easy to see what money came from whom and where did it go.
Hmm. Interesting. Great.
And so that's one.
Yeah.
So one other thing,
yeah, go ahead.
If I might, is I didn't like the forms that we had, specifically the reimbursement form. So I redid the form. There was way too many options and it was very confusing. So I rebuilt the forms in Excel and we print them out and we use them, and it's categorized by primary and young women's and young men's and activities. And then there's a line for the other, for the stuff that the general membership, the general auxiliaries do not need to select, stuff like from the distribution center and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, when you're called as a clerk, you kind of see the forms as just like, wow, this is something that I guess I'm supposed to use. But you know, each form just, or each ward just creates their own reimbursement form, right? And so don't hesitate to adjust that to work for you. And I think most people continue using the form just because they don't know what they don't know, right? But as time goes on, they kind of say, oh, I don't get why it's done this way, but and feel free to change it. And on Leading LDS, we have somebody submitted a reimbursement form that they use in their ward that is printed directly on one of the envelopes, right? And so if somebody needs an idea, I'll link to that in the show notes to go to that post. And it has the Word document there. You can just download the template and adjust how you'd like and print it right on the envelope. And it saves another tree, I guess. But
that's great.
Another thing I was going to mention, as far as you said, you know, getting training from, you know, hopefully the state clerk or the ward clerk, depending on, you know, if people are moving or not. But made me think of it, you could even contact one of the auditors, right? Or contact the high counselor that's over auditing and say, hey, can you send one of your auditors out just to, you know, maybe go through a mock audit with me? And just because I think you learn so much from that auditing process, and there's no reason to wait for that 6 month, cycle to go through. And I just think of our stake auditors, you know, I think a lot of them have an additional calling in their ward since, you know, it's a calling that they only need to do once every 6 months. But I think I know for a fact all of our auditors would gladly come in and go through that because it would make their job easier down the road when they're doing the actual audit, right? And so that might be another area to look for some training. So any other hacks that you have in clerk land?
Keep things in order. All your checks, all your receipts, all your the donation slips, keep them in order. Makes the audit easier. Nice. And it takes less time.
Nice. And I think a lot of people, and I don't know off the top of my head the exact protocol, but study the handbook and look at what actually needs to be kept. Because I find a lot of clerks keep way too much, like stuff that they're not required to keep, or they don't, you know, they don't shred it. They just sort of hang around with, and there's all these stacks that slowly accumulate in the clerk's office.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of that could even be just scanned in if you do need to reference it in the future, right? And then the other stuff, you know, I think, you know, financial statements and tithing, there's time periods you keep that before you shred it, but there's no reason to hold on to everything, right? So just be familiar with what you do need to hang on to. Speaking of, you know, clerk hacks, one thing, this is some advice I'll give to you to look into, but there is this company called Melissa Data. Have you heard of Melissa Data?
I'm not familiar with it, no.
So I've been meaning for literally years to get around and create a post on this, and maybe this will be my final push to finally do that. But so what Melissa Data is, and this is more of a membership clerk hack, but nonetheless, so all of the, when somebody moves, you know, you go to the post office and create a mail forwarding, you file that so that all your mail gets forwarded on. And so that's all public data, right? And so what the company like Melissa Data does is they have a database that's full of that public data. And what you do is, I think it costs like $15, and they send you their software, and it's a software that lays right on top of Excel. And so basically the process is you don't even necessarily ship them any records or names or anything. It all stays in-house. But what happens is that you export everything into an Excel spreadsheet, all the membership names and addresses. And then through their software, it just matches up what addresses have a forwarding address. And then it, in one swoop, it gives you all of the new addresses for a bunch of names. So if you're in a very transient ward, which I, when I was bishop in our stake as well, is very transient. And you know, there's always this mess of records that you don't know where these people are. And so what people do in the past is they'll send out, you know, a yearly Christmas message from the bishop or bishopric, and then they get all the return mail back. And then on the return mail, it tells them what the forwarding address is. So instead, you can do this Melissa Data. It's much cheaper than spending all that postage on sending out those letters. So again, you're a better steward of the ward budget. And in just one swoop, you can, and we do this on the stake level. So for $15, we do all the wards in the stake get updated as far as where the forwarding addresses are. Mm-hmm. And then you're done, right? And so you can clean up the records very quickly, send the record onto the new ward, and you're much closer to your goal of having accurate roles. So there
that's
you
phenomenal.
Have it.
I'm going to pass that on.
Yeah, pass it on. And I promise to listeners out there, I'll put some more information. And actually, we're going to do it here again soon in our stake. And so I'm going to take some screenshots and such just so I can show the process. And hopefully it'll help out people. And I think a listener originally recommended I do that, but that was years ago. Nonetheless, there's your clerk hacks. We need to do more of those. I need to do a whole episode where people just send in their basic hacks of being a clerk, you know, obviously up to protocol and policy as yep. needed. So, well, Michael, this is fantastic. You know, this is a topic that, for lack of a better term, it's not as sexy as a leadership calling as maybe others are, right? But nonetheless, it's an important one, right? And you mentioned, what did you say before we recorded? Your stake president or someone said that it's something about the hidden leadership callings. What was that?
So it was actually my mission president.
Oh, okay.
And he's the one who taught me that just because you're not in a leadership-facing calling doesn't mean that you're not a leader. Mm. So even primary teachers are leaders.
Yeah.
Even nursery leaders are leaders.
I love that.
Of course, they have leaders in the name, but still, same idea.
Yeah, for sure. But sometimes we don't live up to that, right? So
absolutely.
Awesome. Well, as you have had an opportunity to serve as a clerk in very administrative heavy calling, you know, filing paperwork, cutting checks, doing audits, how has serving that capacity made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
It's helped me to become more aware of the needs of others. A lot of times we don't know the needs. Even sometimes in our home teaching and visiting teaching, we don't always know because people don't want to share, but they'll talk to the bishop about certain things. And so as I've become more aware of other people's needs, the Lord has softened my heart and has helped me to, you know, have a better attitude and have greater kindness towards those individuals.
Some spiritual guidance and practical guidance. A big shout out to Michael for allowing me to pressure him into an interview. He's a good sport nonetheless, and I'm glad we did. He shared a lot of good perspective and things that leadership principles that we can learn as a clerk, a very administrative heavy role that's important nonetheless. So I encourage you to forward this on to any clerk that you know in the church that is serving diligently, and I think they would benefit from the guidance and perspective that Brother Roper shares. As always, all we ask is $1 a month for the content that we produce at Leading LDS. And you can do that by going to leadinglds.org, and there's an obvious donate button where you can contribute $1, $2, $3, $1,000, $1,000,000, as many dollars as you'd like that will all go towards helping this leadership body move forward and continue to create content that's going to bless the lives of leaders across the world. At least that's our hope, and we can't do it without you. And, you know, in the past, I've said, you know, you get 3 episodes and then you have to start donating. And I thought that was maybe kind of mean. But seriously, if you're like listening to this and you're like, man, this is good stuff, I'm going to keep listening. Come on, let's help a brother out and then donate so that we can keep doing this and find more quality content and people I can interview in this world that'll bless the kingdom of God as we strive to be better leaders. That's what our motto is, to enhance leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Until next time. Be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.